News Talk WSB's Money Matters is on the air on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB, brought to you by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, and Sandy Springs. Money Matters is a live call-in talk show about money, investing, and how to grow and keep what you have. Your host is certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta Capital Investment Advisors, Wes Moss.
Is the American way.
Yes, it is. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. Rainy Sunday, so what better than to talk about money? Just for the next hour, from 10 to 11, we're going to be here talking about you, your finances, how to help you figure out what to do when the market hits brand new all-time highs, 15,000 on the Dow on Friday. We closed almost at 15, hit it in the middle of the day, up 261 points. On the other side of the spectrum, the 10-year Treasury bond at 1.74%. That's what you get per year on a 10-year basis if you were to buy a Treasury today. So stocks at an all-time high. Apple actually issued bonds this week for the first time in 20 years. They had $17 billion of bonds that they sold on Tuesday. That's the largest corporate bond deal in the history of the world. Apple, again, we know them as a technology giant. They said in April they're going to borrow cash in order to pay $100 billion out to shareholders over the next several years. $100 billion to shareholders. That is a big, big number. Well, why are they going to borrow money? Well, pretty simple. They've got a lot of the money they have in cash. It's overseas. If they were to bring it back here, they face steep corporate taxes to do so. Call that number 35%. Call it 40%. Well, are you going to pay 40% to bring the money back and then pay it out as a dividend, or are you going to borrow the money at 2% and then use that to pay out in dividends? Well, that makes all the sense in the world, and that's why a company cash rich as they are would even attempt or raise money through a bond offering. And you're going to start seeing Apple bonds show up in things like LQD, which is an ETF that owns corporate bonds. You're going to see Apple bonds everywhere. Because the debt is, it's a large amount of debt. It's very safe debt, obviously. It's on the other end of the spectrum. It's very low yielding debt. It's because it's, I don't know, what's safer, an Apple bond or a bond from the U.S. Treasury? I'll let you be the judge of that. But good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning to take your calls and your questions. So I do want to go to the phones here. We're live this morning on this rainy Sunday, 404-872-0750 is the line here in the studio, 1-800-WSB-TALK. What do you have? What might you have questions about? Well, I've had a lot of talk over the last month or two about people ready to actually retire, pull the trigger. I'm ready to get out of this job that I'm grown not to love like I used to love, because I've been doing it for 25 or 30 or 35 years, and I can get a lump sum, or I can get a pension. Which one makes more sense? Should I take the $3,000 a month, or should I take the $800,000? Should I take the $600 a month, or should I take the $200,000? These lump sum offers are all over the map, and you typically are going to have to make a decision between that and a monthly payment. What's a better deal? There's a lot to consider. The rate, the guaranteed rate of return, what happens if you die? Does your spouse continue to get the same amount of money, less money? These are questions and calculations we're happy to talk through with you here on this Sunday morning. How about, what am I doing with my mutual funds and ETFs inside my 403B plan or my 401K plan or IRA? Maybe you're just now in charge of new money that you haven't been in charge of before, and you find yourself in a new financial situation. That's a question we get here. And then what about, are you ready to buy some sort of product and you're maybe just getting cold feet? Hey, I was about to buy an annuity and I just wanted to check with you guys to see if it still makes sense. Maybe it's a refinance question. We're here to help you with that. So I'm live in the studio. That's why we come in here on Sundays. The number here, Ryan Ely standing by to take your call and patch it through, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm going to start with Jeremy, who joins us from Smyrna. Hey, Jeremy, what's going on? How can I help you?
Hey, Wes. How you doing?
Good, good.
Hey, I got a question about some target date funds.
Yes.
I've got two target date, one in my Roth, one in my wife's Roth. I happen to have a traditional IRA with even a third target date. They're all 2040 funds. Can I don't know if I can name the names of them.
Certainly, absolutely.
Okay, so I've got a T-Row and a Vanguard 2040. Both of those went up on Friday because the market was banging, went up 0.9%, so almost a percentage point. Well, then I've got my Fidelity 2040 and my Weiss Roth. It went down almost a percentage point. So how does that happen?
Okay, so Jeremy's asking about different target date funds that are supposed to be doing pretty much the same thing. And why we know that is that they're the same date. So you have both of these funds. One's T. Rowe Price, one's Fidelity, but they're both targeting the year 2040. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm looking this up, and I've actually had a similar question to this before, and I think I know what's happening.
The Fidelity is a little bit more conservative. There's a little bit more cash in there. But with the market doing what it was doing on Friday, I just assumed maybe it would be a 0.7 as opposed to 0.9.
Okay, so let's see these two funds here. You're right. The allocations are a little bit different. You've got T. Rowe Price is basically 60% U.S. stocks and 30% international with a small chunk in bonds and cash, less than 10%. Fidelity, the same 2040 type of fund, is a little more conservative. It's got 12% in cash. That's a lot higher, and 15% in bonds. So it's about double, but it still shouldn't be. One was up almost 1%, and one was down almost 1%, right?
That's correct.
That's a pretty big delta. That's a pretty big change. And it's not explained by a slightly different asset allocation. Here's what it is. And they list on the Fidelity page the top holdings. Here's one of the big differences, Jeremy, is that Fidelity has a big percentage in a commodity fund. So Fidelity 2040 is, again, a fund of funds. So they have lots of different funds that cover each asset class, a bond fund, a U.S. fund, a non-U.S. fund, but they also have a commodity fund. And commodities were, and what's happening here is this is actually a reporting delay, it looks like to me, because if you click on their commodity fund, it shows that commodity piece is down 1.5%. And even though commodities were up on Friday, it's because that commodity fund is reporting a day that's several days ago. And sometimes that'll happen with mutual funds, Jeremy, is that you don't get an updated or very up-to-date price. It may be a day or two or three or four days behind. And that's what's happening here because it shows that big holding, the commodity fund, is down 1.5. And that was a price all the way back April 26th, which is several days before last Friday. So it looks like all that's happening there is a lagging problem. I wouldn't be surprised if Monday it's up and the market, let's say the market's down, I wouldn't be surprised if it's actually up because it's just catching up to its performance.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, even if that comes to fruition, it's still going to be a lot different than where I'm at with my T. Rowe with, I think, 2% cash versus 11. With your expertise, based on me being fairly young, not retiring until 2040, does it make sense for me to move that?
I'm a big fan. Yeah, it does. To me, it does. Fidelity, again, I like Fidelity as a company. This is nothing against Fidelity. They're not known for their target date funds. They're popular because I think that they're a big push for Fidelity, but some of the Freedom funds are not they're not as inexpensive as a lot of other target date funds. That's one issue. And the allocations are pretty different. So, and again, every target date fund is going to be different from Vanguard to T. Rowe Price to Fidelity to Hartford. You name it. If it's different fund families will have different target allocations. For somebody young, though, that's why this call is so important for anybody listening. If you've got a target date fund, and so many people do inside 401k plans, you can't just stick the money in a target date fund blindly. You've got to understand, because they're all so different, and this is a perfect example of how you've got to look and see what the target date fund is actually doing. And in Jeremy's case, Jeremy, in your case, it does probably make more sense to use a fund like T. Rowe Price because it is a more pure play on stocks. And when you're young, I don't know if it really makes sense to have 12% in cash, 15% in bonds. That's a pretty big number. And the T. Rowe Price fund does not do that. So it could be a better fit for you as opposed to trying to have the, all these different target date funds. The other thought here is that I think it gets confusing when you have multiple funds that are also fund of funds. Think about how many different mutual funds you really own. You've got funds on top of funds on top of funds. If you're going to use a target date fund, pick one good one that meets your allocation needs and stick with that one. And it sounds to me that the T. Rowe Price is a better fit for you, and they're also known to have lower expenses as well. I don't know the exact expenses on these two funds, but T. Rowe Price is typically a little less expensive from a target date perspective. So, great call. Hopefully, does that help you, Jeremy?
It does. You know what? I guess I kind of got lucky, and I was able to test out both funds and quickly realized as of Friday that T. Rowe was a better option for me. So, I do appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad you called.
Thank you very much.
Have a great Sunday. 404-872-0750, the line here in the studio. We're going to go to Dick, who joins us from Atlanta. Hi, how can we help?
Is it me?
Yes, it's you.
Yes. I've got some older friends. I'm about to retire. I'm a teacher. I've got a 403B. And they're putting their money into, like, the Southern Company, into utility stocks that pay steady dividends. Does that make sense as a strategy to do that?
Absolutely. It does. From a philosophical perspective, it's a big part of what I advocate, meaning that I think that retire. In fact, here's what's happening. This is interesting. More and more bond mutual funds are buying dividend-paying stocks. And historically, that's not something that we've really ever seen. And it's because a bond manager can go out and get dividends that are paying from stocks that are paying higher than a lot of the bonds that they own inside the bond fund. So it's an interesting period of time that we're in history where you have more than half of stocks inside the S&P 500 that are paying dividends higher than the Treasury. The number's 55%. So that means almost 250, 300 stocks out of 500 in the S&P are bigger yielders than buying bonds. That's just something that hasn't happened before. Very, very rare occurrence that we see that type of dislocation. So your teacher friends that are going to do that, I think they're on the right track. However, you really have to be careful about just buying a few individual companies that are going to do that. Now, for instance, Southern Company, great company. It's been around for a very long time. I think it's a safe company to own for the next long, long period of time. However, it's just one company, and it can go down by 10 and 20% and 30% just like any other stock. So I'm less inclined to own one or two of these big utility companies.
You spread it around.
And more inclined to own something like the utility ETF from iShares, or Spiders, symbol XLU, that can hold 25 or 30 big utility companies that will give you a lot more diversification. But thinking of investing through dividends and generating cash flow, that in principle does make a lot of sense to me. We're here live, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Stick with us as soon as we get back from break. It's Take a Look Around. It's a new company for Tala. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, Certified Financial Planner, here on News Talk WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Time for Take a Look Around. Inspiration this week to our Take a Look Around segment. Pretty interesting because I can honestly say that I know someone who has a free year-long supply of potato chips. Pretty interesting. It's actually Ryan. He won let's say he was the highest bidder and won this at a silent auction for Cape Cod potato chips. He just took delivery of the package this week. So if anybody needs some free potato chips, you know where to ask. We're right up in Sandy Springs, by the way. So it's interesting because we've been eating in the office these Cape Cod chips for years. So you buy a bag, you leave it in the kitchen, and you can eat it with lunch for a couple weeks, let's say. Good news is we don't have to buy them anymore, but most people still do. And that got us kind of digging around to see who actually makes Cape Cod. Well, the answer, they're distributed by Snyder's Lance. It's actually a publicly traded company, LNCE. They're kind of a small to mid-sized company, about $1.7 billion. Annual sales, about $1.6 billion. Net profit margin, about 4.1%. So those little crackers that you buy at the golf course or baseball games, they're not that profitable, but they sell a lot of them. They also own Hanover. I'm slightly addicted to. I love those pretzels that they make. I eat them pretty much every single night when I get home. So it's Lance Crackers. I don't know anybody who doesn't eat Lance Crackers at some point in a given month. And their other big brand, of course, is Cape Cod Chips. which I'll be getting for free now from Ryan for the next many, many, many months. So pretty interesting. They actually have a yield of about 2.5%. They have not, though, increased the dividend for a number of years. So that I do not like. But worth taking a look at. Remember, the stocks we talk about here on this segment, they're not specific recommendations. They're for informational purposes. Always complete your own due diligence on these. Consult your advisor about them before you dive right in, head first into a bag of potato chips. We're live here, 404-872-0750. Calls, questions when we get back from break. You're listening to Money Matters on News Talk WSB.
Diversification will set you free. It's more money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss. This is Money Matters on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on News Talk WSB. Good morning. It is a rainy Sunday. Well, at least it looks like it's going to continue to be a rainy Sunday. I see. Listen, I'm not the weather guy. I'm just not going to go there. I'm terrible at weather. I'm the worst weather person there is. We'll leave that to Kirk Mellish. But 10:36, it's time for more calls and questions here on Money Matters. 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to start with, wait, where are we starting, Ryan? We're going to go to John, who joins us from Gainesville. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning, Wes. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. How can I help you?
I'm forced with a decision where I have to make some repairs to my home, but with the market the way it is, they keep saying that it's a seller's market. So I'm wondering whether it's advisable to sink money that I'm going to be coming into repairing the home to sell it, or take a loss and invest the money elsewhere.
Ryan and I were just talking about this morning, about the Atlanta housing market. I did a vlog on it a couple weeks ago. Where are you in Atlanta, by the way?
Flowery Branch.
My thought here is, and I don't know that market. I don't know the Flowery Branch market, let's say, as well as I do some of the more metro or in-town areas where I live. But it's pretty remarkable what's happened to housing. The Case-Shiller home price numbers that came out just this week, nationally up 9.3%. Nationally, across the board, year over year. That's a tremendous rebound. And then if you look at the Atlanta numbers, I want to say the Atlanta numbers were 16% for year over year. Now, we have a lot of ground to make up in Atlanta, and we were a little bit worse than some of the, if you looked at, we were a little bit worse than some of the average-type markets. Not as bad as a Vegas or a Phoenix, but certainly not, we didn't hold up like Denver, Colorado either. But we're clearly in a point where housing prices have firmed up. I wonder if what's happened, John, is that we've seen this kind of initial bounce back, almost like the bounce off the bottom. And then I don't see another 12% or 16% for Atlanta over the next year. That pace won't continue. I think what we're seeing there is this bounce back, and that's the initial start of just leveling out, going back to historical norms like they should be, which are about 2 to 3% a year. Housing prices have gone up about what inflation has gone up over time. So I think that if you haven't gotten that in your neighborhood, you're probably back to a slow, steady 2 to 3% a year. And yes, it is a seller's market. We may get back to kind of just a more balanced market over the next year. So it really just goes back to, do you want to stay in the house? Do you love your home? Or in a year from now, are you going to be saying, hey, you know, I kind of wish I had moved a year ago when it might have been easier to do anyway? Where do you come down on that question?
Well, I really have no attachment to the home. I don't know whether to liquidate it or hold on to it for future investment because of real estate. But I know the real estate prices, they climb very slowly, as you said. And I guess I'm really more worried about whether or not I'm going to sink money into it that I'll never get back if I fix the house up.
How big of a – so let's go through some of the parameters briefly. What's approximate value of the home, and how much do you owe on the home?
You know what? It was just refinanced, and it's refinanced for $95,000. That's what I owe. We originally purchased the home for about $114,000. The home values in that neighborhood are dramatically low. a similar house that is next door to me sold for $30,000 less. So I'm really sort of in a pickle here, trying to decide, you know, which way I'm supposed to do this.
So you've had some short sales in the neighborhood that bring down your value, which is pretty frustrating. So you may not even get, if you just refinanced, you may not even get 95 if you were to sell it. Right?
That's my fear.
Yeah. See, that is so it's really hard for me to say, yeah, go cash another 10 grand or 15 grand into the house, knowing that you're just going to go further underwater. So you're right. You're kind of digging a hole or throwing money down a hole. But if you think you're just going to stay there, you look at it not from an investment standpoint, but a point that, hey, I'm just going to live in this house for the next 5 years. And if I spend 10 grand to renovate it and it's more livable, then in 5 years from now, I'll likely be able to get my 95 or 100,000 for the house and be fine. Are you think you're okay to live there for another 5 years?
I would really like to be out of it sooner. There was also an alternative decision of maybe fixing it up to rent. But still, there's money sinking it into it to get it rent ready.
How much would you have to spend to fix it up?
At a bare minimum, I believe $6,000 to $7,000.
How much could you get for rent every month?
You know, I think it's safe to say between 7 to 9.
Which is not a terrible rate of return. And what's the monthly mortgage payment on it?
About $630.
So you basically break even. Yeah, here's my thought. What I would do is I'd put it on the market, do the bare minimum cosmetic work on it. So not the 6 to 7, but maybe $1,000 or $1,500 to get it spruced up. See if you can at least sell it for what you owe. And that way you can just move on. It sounds to me like you don't love this house. And
no.
You kind of want to get out of it. So don't tie yourself up if you don't have to. When the market, it may be about as good as it's going to get over the next couple of years. You're right. This is about as hot as I've seen the market. Well, it's definitely as hot as I've seen the market in a long time on the real estate side. I don't see it getting any hotter is what I'm saying. So you might have a window here, John, a six-month window at the tail end of this bounce off the bottom that you could actually get a decent amount of money for the house. And it may not be a family, it may be an investor that says, hey, I can get $750 a month or $800 a month, cover my note. And I know people are out there looking for rental properties. So you might be able to sell it to an investor.
Okay.
And the investor will look at it and say, well, I could probably, again, put the bare minimum, still rent this place out. So this is a little bit of a timing issue when we're talking about the real estate market, John. And my thought here is if you're going to get out of it at parity and not have to come to the table, come to closing with money, the next few months is probably your best window. So I would give it a shot and do it right now. 404-872-0750. We're going to go to Tony in Roswell. Tony, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can I help?
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. Listen, I have a couple of questions about the dividend paying ETFs. I'm looking for retirement in the next couple of years. I'm looking for income and help. And I was wondering how, if you go into an ETF, dividend paying, high yield ETF, how do you get your disbursement? How do you get your income? Because I have like 12 stocks, individual stocks right now that pay pretty good dividends. But I like what you said about put them in a basket. I just kind of vague on what exactly how that ETF would work.
So think of the ETF, Tony, as a pass-through structure. It's really just a legal structure. ETF means exchange-traded fund. And when they were originally created back in the very early 1990s, ETF was almost going to be named it was going to be exchange-traded mutual fund. So think of it as, and then they dropped the M, they dropped the mutual, so it's not an ETMF, it's just an ETF, just for simplicity's sake. And an ETF is just a legal way to basket stocks together, just like a mutual fund is. The only difference between a mutual fund and an ETF, technically, is that you can buy and sell the ETF throughout the day. So it's a tradable basket on the New York Stock Exchange that trades every second like a stock does. So, but like a mutual fund, it's a structure that allows multiple different securities inside of it. So it can have 100, 200, 500, 1,000 stocks in one ETF, 100, 200, 500, 1,000 bonds inside an ETF. gold commodity futures inside an ETF. It's just a structure to put securities in. And then as far as how do you get your dividends from a stock ETF, it's really, think of it just as a pass-through. So if you have a stock ETF, like I talked about earlier today, there's 100 stocks. Well, those 100 stocks pay dividends every quarter, just like the stocks that you own individually. And then they all pay, let's say, during the month of March. It may be April 5th. That ETF waits. They collect all the dividends, and they pay them out all at once or every quarter in aggregate. So you're going to get stock, all those stocks dividend, all the stocks inside of your ETF will pay. And then very quickly after they pay, your ETF pays it out to you. So it's a perfect way to be able to have lots of different dividend income all lumped into a quarterly payment that just comes from that one ETF or multiple ETFs.
Well, how do you research these? Where do you go to find out the best ones? You go for like sector? Do you go, exactly how do you select which one you think would be the best? And I don't want to overlap. I don't want to buy one that's going to have Home Depot in every one of them. Well, I don't get one that has Walmart in every one of them. How do you know?
So a couple of ways here. One, you're going to have to go to Morningstar, and just like they'll take an X-ray and really look under the hood of a mutual fund, they'll do the same thing for an ETF. So you can go to Morningstar.com, put in SCHD or SDY or DVY, some of the ETFs that we mentioned here, and see what the holdings are. You can actually see on Morningstar, you'll typically see the top 10 or 25 holdings, and that'll give you a great idea what's in the fund or the ETF. And then you'll see if they're large stocks or small stocks. It'll show you all the different sectors. And you just have to do your homework. You have to just do your homework to make sure you're not doing tremendous overlap. But you might want to look at it and say, I've got a ETF that's really high yielding stocks that are not growing dividends quite as fast as another dividend ETF that's a little bit of a lower paying yield or a little lower yield, but these are faster growing companies or faster growing growth. The difference between, let's say, a Vanguard dividend appreciation ETF and DVY, which is the Dow Jones higher yielding dividend ETF. They're going to have some overlap, but the purpose behind each ETF is a little bit different. One is to kind of maximize what you're getting paid out in yield. The other one is to have maximum dividend growth, and they may be nice complements to each other. So the answer here is that it might be that you need 5, 10, 15 different ETFs to cover all your bases. And you're just going to have to do the research on Morningstar to do so. I'd love for you to keep tuning in Sunday mornings, by the way, Tony. You can at least start your research here.
Okay. Well, it's a very good program. I enjoy it a lot. I'm a loyal listener, and I really enjoy what you say. I'm just trying, like I said, getting prepared in the next several years to retire, and I want to supplement my income somehow, and I want to do it the most efficient, most effective way.
Well, you're on the right track, my friend, and I appreciate you. Appreciate the call.
Thank you so much.
Have a great Sunday. 404-872-0750 is the number here live in the studio, and it's time for the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. Ryan Ely, take it away.
The WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack is a family four-pack of tickets to the 71st Annual Yarab Shrine Circus and Fair, now through May 12th at Jim Miller Park in Marietta. A pair of tickets to see Atlanta Symphony Orchestra in concert on May 11th at Atlanta Symphony Hall. A maintenance agreement for two residential HVAC tune-ups, courtesy of Shoemate Air Conditioning and Heating. And a pair of tickets to see Steely Dan in concert on September 7th at Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. This week's prize value, $449. This week's trivia question, Iron Man 3 hits theaters. It's huge. I'm sure Wes's kids will make them go see that one.
So true. So true.
But there's a giant company behind Iron Man 3 looking to profit hundreds of millions of dollars from all of the toys people are going to have to buy and all the ticket sales. What company is behind Iron Man 3?
Now, let me ask you this. I think I know this one. Is it the same company that is behind Man of Steel, the new Superman movie coming out June 14th?
I don't think so. I think it's actually a different company.
I am there to try to make this a more confusing question because I think this one's too easy. Okay, we're going to be back. We've got more Money Matters coming up. We also, of course, have the answer to the prize pack. And then if you want to find me and the Money Matters team throughout the week, it's easy to do so. And we continue to meet with investors that are on the cusp of retirement, ready to figure out what to do, get a second opinion, or investors that are just younger that are saying, hey, I need to really get a great start in what I'm doing with my investments. We're happy to sit down and do a free one-hour consultation. We've done that for years. We'll continue to do that. We're right up in Sandy Springs, easy to find, easy to reach out to. Best way to do that is email radio@yourwealth.com or go to our good old-fashioned website, yourwealth.com, yourwealth.com. Stay tuned for more Money Matters as soon as we get back from a quick break. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Time for one more call. Sherry and Gwinnett, how can we help? Good morning.
Hi,
Sherry. How can I help you?
My husband and I had decided to pay one of our houses. We got two off in 2.5 years, and it was going to free up money, but we want to make use of the money, and we don't know much about stocks or any of that. Where's a good place to go?
Are you going to take that same money soon and buy another house, or you've now paid off one, and this is retirement money?
This is it's going to be retirement money. We already have 401ks and all, but when I get on my 401k, I just know they do good. I want to know something about where the money's going and is it a good idea on this or that. I just really would like to know.
Sherry, here's what to do. It's very simple. Go to NAPFA, NAPFA.org, and I'll put that link up on our Facebook page, Wes Moss Money Matters. By the way, answer to the trivia question is Disney. They own Marvel, who owns the rights to Iron Man. I know you were worried about that, Sherry. And
yes.
Go to NAPFA.com and find a fee-only planner in your area. You can go sit down with someone that's going to give you ideas that are unbiased and ideas that will try to help you to put that money to work because there's a lot to wade through, right? We talked about dividend-paying stock ETFs, bond ETFs, floating rate bonds, MLPs. There's a lot to think about, but it doesn't have to weigh you down and paralyze you from making a decision. So start there and get the planning done first. Thank you for being with us here on this Sunday morning. Have a great week. We'll see you next Sunday, 9 to 11, for more Money Matters here on News Talk WSB.
True Green loans are so loved, they deserve a slow jam. That's what I like.
Well, my lawn used to get these brown spots, and as soon as I'd fix one, another would show up.
It was a turf tease.
So I called True Green. Their certified specialists did a healthy lawn analysis, which showed that the problem was chinch bugs.
That grass was bugging.
The thing I like about True Green is that they have a scientific approach developed by folks with PhDs.
Top of the class in grass.
So now my lawn is healthy and beautiful. I haven't seen a brown spot in months.
The terra is firma.
And if those spots ever return, True Green will come back between regular visits. It's called the Healthy Lawn Guarantee.
That's a never-ending lawn love, baby. That's what that is.
Give your lawn the protection it needs against chinch bugs. Call 866-TRUE-GREEN today and save 10%. True Green. Go greener.
You can't plan for plumbing problems. Could happen today, next month, or next year. Don't worry, I've got the solution. Superior Plumbing. This is Dave Baker, host of the Home Fix-It Show. My plumber is Superior Plumbing, the honest plumber. Being honest means they're on time, at your door when they say. They respect your time and your budget with quality professional work done right by licensed plumbers at a fair price. From the moment you dial 770-422-PLUM until your job is completed, Superior Plumbing delivers a smooth and easy customer service experience. They're on your side. From urgent problems to leaks, clogged drains and repairs, Superior Plumbing is Dave Baker recommended. You can't plan today for tomorrow's plumbing problems, but you can be prepared to call my guys. Family owned and operated, Superior Plumbing.
Just Superior, the honest one.